Hello, hello, and welcome to another episode of Power Up and Game. This is episode 27. I'm your host, Michael, and I am joined once again by our official, unofficial third member, Taylor. Taylor, how's it going?
I am doing outstanding, Michael. I cannot wait to get into our show here today. We got a little more Nerds Talk movies injected into this show.
Yes, yes, because we're going to be talking about our little main topic. But first, let's check out what's on our docket for today. We don't have a ton of stories this week, but we still have some good stuff to talk about. One of those things being, Cyberpunk 2077 is getting a sequel. About a year ago, that seemed impossible. We'll also be talking about Overwatch 2 and how it has had a horrendous launch so far. We'll get into some of that and our impression of the game, if we have any. And I'm going to go ahead and go off the script for this one. I cannot wait to hear Taylor talk about this, because everything we were talking about before the recording has been ace, and I cannot wait to hear him. Brazil's regulatory body has approved the Microsoft Activision Blizzard King deal. And as I alluded to before, in our main topic, we are once again injecting a little Nerds Talk movies into this podcast. That's because Nintendo has finally dropped the first teaser trailer for the upcoming Super Mario Bros. Movie. So without further ado, let's do this. Taylor, go ahead and take it away for our stories of the week.
Don't mind if I do, Michael. And real quick, we do want to say that you can find sources for all the topics that we're going over today down in the description of this very episode. We do that to give it out proper credit, and if any listeners want to read further about any of the topics we cover, or simply want to check it out for themselves. So for our first story of the day, we're going to be talking about some Cyberpunk 2077, because it's getting a sequel. CD Projekt Red recently talked about their upcoming games in the pipeline. This includes a new Witcher trilogy, more Witcher projects, a new IP codenamed Hadar, and a sequel to Cyberpunk 2077, which is codenamed Orion. Via Twitter, the developer had this to say regarding the Cyberpunk 2077 sequel. Quote, Orion is a codename for our next Cyberpunk game, which will take the Cyberpunk franchise further and continue harnessing the potential of this dark featured universe, end quote. CD Projekt Red is also opening a new studio in Boston, and it'll be called CD Projekt Red North America. Like you said earlier, Michael, about a year ago, a sequel to Cyberpunk 2077, it did seem impossible. We all know about the games. It had a disastrous launch. We'll be talking about disastrous launch here in a minute as our next story. But anyways, but over the last year, there have been a lot of positivity around Cyberpunk. Things only got better with the release of Netflix's Cyberpunk Edgerushers anime. So, what do you make of CD Projekt Red announcing all of these games? Also, what are your thoughts on Cyberpunk 2077 getting a sequel?
So, I hate to correct you, buddy, but it's Cyberpunk Edgerunner, not Rusher.
I don't know why I had that, but that's okay.
Well, it's weird because a couple days ago, I was thinking of the, I was going through Crunchyroll, and I saw the animated feature I'm forgetting it because I'm thinking about Edgerunner. Forget it. You know what? Forget it. It was Black Lotus, and I forget what it was. Blade Runner. There we go. For Blade Runner, Black Lotus. And I was getting the two mixed up, as you just heard right now. So I apparently haven't learned my lesson yet. But I haven't watched the anime yet because unfortunately I don't have Netflix, and I won't have Netflix until about February when a couple of stuff that I want to watch comes out. So I won't be able to watch it until February. But the point that this anime is apparently so good that it got people not only to start playing Cyberpunk 2077, but also to buy the game, which I was like, wow, I hope you guys weren't hoping that the anime and the game were like synonymous with each other, because even though like it's great synergy, I don't know how much of Edgerunner is actually in Cyberpunk 2077. I know they added a few weapons in there, a couple weapons from the anime in there. But I'm actually surprised with how much people were just like, you know what? It's not that bad anymore. And it's like, the enemy is so good, I'm just going to start buying the game.
Well, I wouldn't even say it's all Edgerunners. Granted, that is a massive part of it. And I think a lot of people have reported on and talked about this already, saying that there's that correlation between that anime coming out and this resurgence of the game. There's been a lot of positivity around Cyberpunk over the past year, too. Through all the updates and everything that, you know, CD Projekt Red has done to actually improve the game from its horrendous state at launch.
From that beta launch, because even the developers were like, yeah, this game needed at least another year before we could release it. So I believe what the devs were saying, like, hey, we needed another year. And I think if we would have gotten this version of Cyberpunk 27 this year, I think people would have been a little less critical about it. But I think a lot of people who are coming in now, I think they were kind of pushed away due to all the dismay from fans at the launch. And they kind of like put them off. And I think they forgot about Cyberpunk 2077. And then when the anime hit, they're like, oh, shit, that's right. This looks really cool. And they go back and they probably find cheap copies of it. New. You still find new copies for less than full price. And they get into it and they've had a much better experience than the people who got the game at launch. When the game got pulled from the PlayStation Network store. And refunds had to go out, and
it's really cluster. And this is talking about Edgerunners here, because that correlation, there's a reason behind it. It's because what you're talking about. People did watch this anime and go play Cyberpunk, and I think it's just all these dominoes falling to returning players who didn't like the game at launch or trying it out again and going, whoa. What is this Cyberpunk? All right, I see the improvement, CD. I see what you did here. And while the game still isn't for me, I'm just looking at this, and I'm like, wow, this is a great comeback story. And it's not done in they did go out and make the improvements and fix the game. But also, it wasn't just they fixed the game and continued to release updates. It's also hit that popularity because a new anime came out to get people onto it, which is just different, you know, than anything we've seen before. And to see that resurgence for this game really lead to CD Projekt Red going, you know what, we're confident in making a sequel now. It's bizarre.
Yeah, not just a sequel.
It's a great story. Even though, again, the game is not for me, I don't think... I've tried it in the past year, didn't really care for it, and maybe I'll try it again, and one of these days it will hook me in. I don't know what it is, just something isn't clicking for me when I'm playing, but I'm very happy for everybody who's enjoying this game, because you do look at it, and you do see the hard work that the developers put into it, and this was like their golden goose here, and it's very great to see it finally pay off.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that it's paying off. I finished the game originally before, like, all the super bug fixes, like the new Cyberpunk 2077 Edgerunner update, and I was left so underwhelmed. And I think that was one of the problems, was that it was just so underwhelming with the way that CD Projekt Red hyped the game up. But with the anime, By now, the hype is gone, okay? Now you can go back and you play the game as a game. You can play it like, okay, well, I know what I'm getting into now. My hype level isn't up. I know what to expect from the AI, the city, how it looks. Mind you, I have the game on PlayStation 5. So I went in being able to play the quote-unquote next-gen version. So my time with the game was better than most, especially people who got the game at launch. I held off, got the game for like $5 or $10 with the collectible tin case when Best Buy was just trying to get rid of these games and give it away, basically. And I was like, okay, I'll get it, but I'm going to wait for the next gen update. So I had a better experience. So everybody who's getting in now, they're probably having like the best experience compared to everybody else.
Well, yeah, that's kind of what I've been saying this whole time. So while it's not a game that you thought was amazing, and I'm kind of in the same boat as you, it is really cool to see this game hit popularity that it hadn't seen. Maybe, I don't want to say pre-release, because this was one of the most hyped games I've seen in quite some time. But to see this game kind of come back from, oh, it's dog shit, to, no, this game's pretty damn great. And it's also because of the updates and an anime that came out, which is a crazy pairing. So yeah, it's just, yeah, like I said, it, while it's not for me, and it apparently wasn't for you either, you found it to be underwhelming, it's really cool to see that CD Projekt Red had success out of this and said, you know what? We're going to make a fucking sequel to it. That is, there's nothing else to say about it. It's a really cool story, man. And that's also, yeah, no, we're is. Not talking about the Witcher sequel trilogy. Like, CD Projekt Red threw a lot of things out here, and I thought that was very, just, they didn't need to do it, but I appreciated it. They didn't go out there and show an Elder Scrolls 6 style, like, here's a title screen, and never show anything again. They just came out and they're like, hey, you know what? Here's other projects we're working on. We will let you know more about them when we have something to share. That's essentially what they said with all these. So I thought just this was a great all-around move from CD Projekt Red, and I can't wait to see what they do with the Cyberpunk 2077 sequel. Maybe the sequel, yeah, will be what hooks me into this franchise.
Yeah, I still have faith in CD Projekt Red. You know, they messed up once, and it was like, oh, CD Projekt Red is gone. They're no longer the company they used to be. It's like, damn, dude, they messed up once because the higher-ups was trying so hard to push this game out. I still believe in the devs at CD Projekt Red. These are honestly talented, brilliant people over there. So I have complete faith in them when it comes to a Cyberpunk 2077 sequel.
And they're also making a new studio in North America, in Boston. So they're expanding. So this is nothing but a positive sign for the studio for me.
Yeah, it's a good sign. Like, everybody stumbles. Like, everybody has that one bad game, at least. Like, nobody's perfect. So I think this is a great learning experience for the higher-ups of CD Projekt Red, where they see that, hey, if we continue to try to do like EA or Bethesda or whatever and try to push out these games before they're ready, we don't get that luxury of like, oh, well, it's EA, of course it's buggy. Oh, it's Bethesda, of course it's buggy. We have set ourselves up to be a pinnacle of creativity for these franchises. And even when it comes to a new Cyberpunk, we can't just throw out whatever. We have to give it our best. So I think that really taught them a lesson, especially when it came to them getting sued a couple of times. So I think that the new sequels are going to be, I think they're going to be a lot better than 2077. But I also kind of wonder, are they going to continue to try to work on 2077 DLC? Because it sounded like they had a long-term plan for the DLCs, especially for stories. Because I think they want to do, like, DLCs close to what they did with Witcher 3, and Witcher 3 has some of the best DLCs that I've ever seen for a game.
Definitely. You want to go ahead and move on to our next story?
Yes, this is the one I've actually kind of been waiting for, because everybody who listens to this podcast knows that I'm usually the one who goes off on these rants. I'm usually the one who's all like, actually, guys, if you pay attention to these things. But that's not going to happen this week. This week, we actually get Taylor, who gets to go ahead and rant a few things. So we are talking about Overwatch 2's launch woes. If you're on social media or spend some time looking at YouTube videos that focus on gaming news, you probably know about Overwatch 2's launch. If you don't know, I'll keep it short. It hasn't been great. For starters, there have been consistent server and instability issues since Overwatch 2's launch, along with the game suffering from multiple DDoS attacks. Last week, we all talked about Blizzard's new first-time user experience guidelines, basically being that Blizzard placed several restrictions on new players by having them jump through hoops to unlock other modes, including competitive mode. Blizzard then required players to not only link their profile to a Battle.net account, but they will also need a phone number for players attached to their account. This was meant to minimize Smurf accounts and cheaters. However, this was a point of conversation pre-release, and to nobody's surprise, it ended up being a controversial thing. When the game launched, people realized that the SMS protect system Blizzard implemented didn't recognize prepaid phone plans as valid phone numbers. In a forum post, Blizzard would apologize for the launch issues, saying, quote, "First, we want to apologize to our players. We expected the launch of Overwatch 2 to go smoothly. We hold ourselves to a higher standard, and we are working hard to resolve the issues that you are experiencing," end quote. The studio would then go on to talk about the SMS protection system, saying that they will remove the numbers requirement for most players, saying, quote, "We designed Overwatch 2 to be a live service, which enable us to be responsive to a variety of player feedback. We have made the decision to remove phone number requirements for a majority of existing Overwatch players. Any Overwatch player with a connected Battle.net account, which includes all players who have played since June 9th, 2021, will not have to provide a phone number to play. We are working to make this change and expect it to go live on Friday, October 7th. We will update players once it is in effect. We remain committed to combating disruptive behavior in Overwatch 2. Accounts that were not connected to Battle.net, as well as new accounts, will still have to meet SMS Protect requirements, which helps to ensure we're protecting our community against cheating. If a player is caught encouraging in disruptive behavior, their account may be banned whether they have a new account or not." End quote. So Taylor, before I throw it to you, because man, I cannot wait to hear what you have to say about this, I want to make it clear that this game's current state and how the launch went down are unacceptable. However, nobody should ever personally attack the developers themselves. We have been against that on this show multiple times. Even with my rants against 343 and Halo, I still gave them props. We don't condone that here on the show. We find it disrespectful and unnecessary. They are probably working their asses off right now trying to fix these issues. So anyone listening to this podcast knows this. Now, we know, Taylor, that I'm usually the one who goes off on these rants. So I just need to know, how are you feeling about all of this?
So first off, the reason you also said that part at the end is we both know that we're going to spend a lot of time in this story bitching about this game's launch. And we just wanted to state the obvious before getting into it. So yes. Just getting the obvious part out of the way. That said, this game's okay. I have a lot of hyperbole sometimes when I speak. I try to catch myself at least sometimes. I sometimes go, "Oh, this is the best thing ever," or "Oh, this is horrible." I'm not exaggerating when I say that Overwatch 2's launch has been one of the worst launches I've ever seen. It has been absolutely horrendous. And I think the only reason it's not even worse is because it's a free-to-play game. Overwatch 1 becomes Overwatch 2. So people who don't want Overwatch 2, too bad. Because Overwatch 1's now Overwatch 2. And you can't go back and play the old experience if Overwatch 2 is overcrowded. The server queues are horrendous. They've been terrible for since launch till now. The SMS Protect, again, the intention, me and Riley talked about it a lot last week. We both pretty much were like, "Hey, we appreciate the intention here. We don't know if this is going to work in execution." And turns out it didn't work in execution. Hence them kind of scaling back on it a lot. So I don't think any of us were really surprised by that one. When it comes to just the issues this game has, I've seen a lot of stuff about people already complaining about the 5v5, about a lot of the gameplay elements and the characters themselves. This, even from a gameplay perspective, it doesn't seem like it's smooth sailing, you know? And then you go to the server issues, you go to the SMS stuff, and it's just, it's fucking unacceptable. It really is. And not only that, the monetization that we knew was going to happen with the game going to free-to-play. And I think, at least for me, I kept a naive hope that maybe it wouldn't be as bad. But from what I've seen online, it's as bad as any free-to-play game that really tries to get every single nickel and dime from a player. And that's just unfortunate. Because Everwatch 1 was such a great game, and I loved it. And I wish I could play Everwatch 2. I really do. I have not been able to play the game yet. I've been stuck in queues. The one time I got through, I set up my account and everything, and then I ended up having to go to my heroes, and everybody was locked, which immediately I was like, oh no. I went to all my characters I usually play as, like Reinhardt. I go to the skins that I'm supposed to have. I don't have them. I'm like, oh no, what happened? I go back to the main menu. There's an account merge. And I'm like, oh, stupid me. I'm supposed to hit that account merge, and that's going to merge my account. And then I click on it. Nothing happens. I click on it. Nothing happens. I hold the button down. Nothing happens. So I decided to go to Reddit. And yeah, apparently there's an issue to where the account merge button sometimes just doesn't want to, you know, function. So I can't even merge my account. It's just absolutely ridiculous. I didn't want to play a game because I didn't want to. You know, sometimes these games, whenever you place, when it'll like lock in certain things so you start to play it. So I didn't want it to be one of those things to where I hit play the game and I play around and then everything is locked in to where I don't get my characters. I don't get my skins right back. So I decided to go, you know what, fuck it. I'm a dashboard and try to go back in. I knew what was going to happen, but it was my only choice, I felt like. So I dashboarded, went back in. Guess what, Michael? 2,000 players are ahead of you. In another server queue. And nice. I never have been able to get back in since. So this has been my experience with Everwatch 2 so far. What about you?
As for me, as I mentioned on a previous episode, I believe it was last week or maybe 2 weeks ago, that I was going to protest Blizzard's dumb SMS protection nonsense by just not playing. After they announced that, hey, we're going to drop the SMS, I was like, cool, I'll download the game. So I decided I'm just going to boot up Overwatch 1. They automatically update Overwatch 1 to Overwatch 2. So I was like, oh, cool, okay, whatever. It was a 23 gigabyte update. So I didn't have to worry about downloading pretty much a whole new game. Because I'm pretty sure it's like 40, 50 gigs. So I was like, cool. Just to test things out, I went into the game knowing I wasn't going to be able to play. I went into the game and I had like a 30, 40 or 50,000 player queue in front of me. And I was like, good God, you know what? I'm going to sit here. I'm going to wait. And I'm going to see how long this takes. And there were multiple times where my Xbox is...
Hold on. Let me predict what happens here.
Go ahead.
So you get down to about 20 players, maybe 100, because sometimes it doesn't tell you really how many people are actually ahead of you. And then all of a sudden, Overwatch 2 brings up a big red banner across your screen telling you error code. Is that what happened to you? Because that happened to me a lot. And I'm sure it happened to actually, a lot of people.
Actually, no, I didn't actually get the error. I know about the error, but I actually was lucky enough not to get that. Instead, I got into the game and got hit with a you can't play this game until you activate your SMS protection. So,
well, that's obvious. Like we just said here, it doesn't go into it's going to be part of this update on October 7th, which is the day this episode's going to post.
Yes. I was really hoping that maybe we'd both be able to talk about it a bit more, but yeah, I got hit with the SMS protection. And again, I already knew I was going to be able to play. Like, this is already given, but I wanted to, since I knew we were going to talk about it, I wanted to go in there and see, like, hey, this is, these long queues are a thing. I've experienced it. Taylor experienced it. You got the errors. I got hit with the SMS protection. I'm waiting. My nephew actually called me yesterday or the day before, and he was like, hey, I'm playing a new Overwatch 2, because he knows I loved Overwatch. I played Overwatch all the time. He's like, I got Overwatch 2. I was like, oh, that's cool, nephew. I can't play until like Saturday, until the weekend. And he was so sad. He was like, oh, all right, I guess I'll see you this weekend then. I was like, wow, man. This kid was looking forward to playing the game that I really enjoyed with me. And I thought that was really cool. And now we can't play because Blizzard wants to play Big Brother. And I refuse to take the extra step and go through those hoops. I already got the Battle.net account, and we all know how I feel about creating new accounts just to play one game. I despise it. For anybody who has never listened to this podcast before, I love the Doom reboot, the Doom reboot, but I did not play Doom Eternal because you needed a Bethesda.net account in order to play it. I was like, screw that. I'm not creating a whole new account just for this one game. Like, I don't even play a whole lot of Bethesda games like that. So it defeated the purpose for me. I'm not jumping through those hoops. The only reason I got the Battle.net account was because they were doing that crossover event with all their games where you get like Overwatch characters into Warcraft and all the other mobile game and the other mobile games that they have. But yeah, they were doing these crossovers with their game, with their characters. They're like, hey, you get these characters in here, you get these skins in Overwatch. You're like, oh, well, okay. See, that I'll create an account for if you actually give me something like, oh, new skins, new characters. Cool, I'll do it. And that's the only reason I have a Battle.net account, because I needed to do it on my PC. So I was like, sure, I'll do it. And I did the thing to where it connected to my Xbox. So hopefully I don't have that merger trouble that you had, that everybody's having. I hope for me it goes a little smoother. I'll probably try after we're done with this podcast. But yeah, so I was already okay with the whole, oh, you can do a merger account. I'm like, good. If you're going to make people have a brand new account, do it to where they can play their games on any system and merge all their stuff together. Because that's a lot of free-to-play games don't do that. Like, I have a couple games on my Xbox, my PC, and even my PlayStation 5 that I really wish had account merging. So that way, whenever I unlock something on one system, I could play it on the other. Ubisoft Rollerball game doesn't do that. They don't let you get something from the PC version and send it over to your Xbox and PlayStation, and it was really stupid. But I always hate that, and that's why I think if you're going to do an account base where you have to create a new account, make it worthwhile to your players. Let them carry that stuff over to any system that they have that accepts their login. So unfortunately, I could not play with my nephew. And that really goes to show the problem with this SMS crap, this whole Big Brother, we're gonna protect the players nonsense. You're building walls, unnecessary walls that splits player bases.
Well, see, the other thing, you're in that specific case where you're just choosing not to, which is completely fine. But it's your choice. Like, it's not like,
yeah,
it's not like Blizzard's keeping you from playing the game because of that. However, people who have prepaid phone plans weren't able to connect to theirs, apparently. Yeah. So it's one of those things that I think, again, this is what Riley and I were talking about last week. You went into your rant about the whole Blizzard and what you would rather have Blizzard do is have a very much better reporting system than doing what they're doing, because they're doing too much and you felt like it wouldn't even be executed very well. And that's kind of what Riley and I were saying, though. But we were like, great intention, Blizzard. We don't want Smurf accounts. We don't want cheaters in the game. We don't want people, you know, cursing out each other and saying these horrible derogatory things. However, we don't really trust that you're going to be able to execute this properly. And yeah, that's exactly kind of what happened here. It's just, from that perspective alone, is just, it could have been avoided whenever it comes to the server issues. And again, they did get DDoSed. I think they got DDoSed twice as well. But at the same time, it's for as many days that this has been going on for, is ridiculous. It really is. And then when it goes to the gameplay itself, there's so much that, again, I haven't been able to play it. Maybe if I play it, I'd have a different perspective, but I literally just haven't been able to play it. So I can only look at what other people, their gameplay experiences, and reading about it and watching it. And from what I've seen, it's a lot of stuff that I question why Blizzard changed it. Because there's nothing wrong with it. And it was things people liked about the game. And that includes something from 6v6 to 5v5. That includes the endorsement system and how it apparently seems more hidden than what it was before. And even the on fire You know, when you're doing really well as a player, and then you'll have the, your player will be like, I'm on fire, or something like that. And then you go to the scoreboard and you're just lit up. And it's really cool. It really shows like, oh, I'm the MVP of the team right now. That's gone in Overwatch 2. Your character apparently still says that they're on fire, but you don't get the visual part on the scoreboard, which is just, it's very weird. There is still some stuff that I've seen that looks pretty cool, like a ping system, which, very cool. I love that. Do more of that, Blizzard. But it's just, it's a, there's also just a bunch of stuff that I question why they changed it, other than for the sake of change.
Because I think they changed it so people who do check scoreboards, they don't, like, feel bad.
I don't think that's why.
Or this is the person I don't I need think to bully.
That's why. There is no way that was the reason why. Because just because somebody's on fire doesn't mean the rest of the team's playing horribly. And that's the thing, too, with Overwatch that I loved is the stats for the character you pick, that's what's shown. So you're going to pop up. It's not like there's a mass, it's not a Call of Duty Battlefield KD sitting next yeah. to every gamer tag saying like, oh, this person went 1-20 is Mercy, so they're fucking horrible. No, she or whoever it is playing Mercy. So let me look at the healing stats. So that's what pops up for the character. And if yeah. you healed, you're going to be up on the MVP scoreboard at the end. So I don't think that's why at all. I get you're going off a Battlefield, but
no, not Battlefield. See, what I'm saying is, now, like I said, I've been playing Overwatch since day one, and I can tell you people can get pretty toxic either because they're on fire and the rest of the team is actually sucking. I've been there before. When I'm on fire with Lucio and I see the rest of my team not really playing well, I get kind of frustrated because obviously I'm playing well, my other team aren't, and this is usually in rank. This isn't during casual play or whatever. This is during rank when I'm trying to get a good ranking. But I don't go around telling people that they suck or whatever. I'm just like, oh, it's frustrating. But for a lot of people, including myself, you check those things to see who's on fire. So you either boost that player, stick with that player so you play better, and that ends up taking away from the actual team-based stuff, or you can find that which enemy player is playing hot, and then you target that player. I've done it before when I'm playing, when I'm playing as D.Va, because the way she's able to just bulldoze with her boost, I would try to find the player that's on fire, and I don't want to say bully, but I would target them and keep them out of the game because obviously that's the player that's pushing the enemy team to win. So I kind of get that. For me, it was a strategy. Find out who's on fire.
If yeah, that's on fire. The part of Overwatch too that I think makes it feel so different than a Call of Duty or a Battlefield.
Yeah, is yeah. And that's what I'm saying. Like, you can use that to that. Yeah.
So whereas the yeah. other person playing as, for example, a D.Va who's on fire, they are just, they're who you need to either avoid or they are who you yep. need to be like, all right, we got to get this player out before we move yeah. forward with anything. Because yeah, they are holding the team up.
Yes, yeah, they're the ones that's holding the team, that's pushing the team forward. And I really yeah. enjoyed that. But I think what Blizzard saw was that more often than not, players were using that to bully their teammates. Or maybe they felt that the targeting was kind of in a realm of bullying. Now, again, like you said, that may not be true. I'm coming with a reason for maybe why they're doing it. And I'm using the fact of how they're trying to protect players as a big deal. So I might as well just say this is my theory on that, because you're right. It may have nothing to do with any of that. But for someone who's played the game since day one,
just me, I think they're just changing things to change it because it's Overwatch 2. And from what I've seen, it seems everybody's making fun of it online, calling it Overwatch 1.5. And that does. Yeah, that's what it does feel like from what I've seen and read about. And that's what I think Blizzard mainly did. They did a lot of these changes to make it feel like it's a brand new game. And I know I'm using a lot of apparently's and seems when I'm talking here. That's because I don't like to talk about, like, oh, my opinions on things unless I have, like, watched something all the way through or played it for myself.
Right. And the thing is, we can only go off base of what we know. And we know that Activision Blizzard is pushing to be more user friendly, that they're pushing for a cleaner fandom and a community. So like these assumptions we're making, these are just they're educational guesses and theories, because we know the evidence that yeah, the Overwatch community is pretty toxic. Like we've all seen it. And we understand that developers want to make things to make their game better. But as you said, it does seem like instead of making things better, like, oh, I don't know, having a better in-game reporting system, they're making certain changes to make this feel like it's a sequel by taking things away, like for no reason, and changing things that probably doesn't need to be changed. I know a lot of people said that the 5v5 feels better. I don't know much about the maps because I haven't been able to play the maps myself. And some people, you know, the way they play the maps is completely different than the way I will play them. And really the three new characters that they've introduced into the game, one of them who is locked behind a free battle pass, I'll admit, but a battle pass nonetheless.
Yeah. If you had the premium battle pass, you unlock the character immediately, I believe. And if you just had the free one, the character is at the end, I think, of the battle pass. I was only able to get in the game once, so you know, I was only able to look through the battle pass and all the characters and everything.
But to talk about the battle pass, you get the new character Kuriko at level 55.
Okay.
So you have to grind. So that's pretty much halfway. So you have to grind out until level 55 to play the new player that Overwatch 1 players would get like as soon as the new character dropped. And yeah, I guess that helps keep it from people just instantly locking the new character. But at the same time, players like myself who've been playing Overwatch 1, we get Kuriko at the very beginning. Like we automatically have her unlocked. So that's going to happen anyway. So I guess for season 2 and 3, it's, hey, go unlock these characters.
I want to go ahead and end this topic. I want to talk about our next one, but I do want to say, hopefully, you know, we both can play this game here sometime soon and get some more positive vibes out of it, so to speak, and get some solid gameplay, because I think we've talked about it before, we really do like Overwatch. I like you, I love the strategy of it, so it's kind of, I'm rooting for this game. As much as we bitched about it, I'm rooting for it because I love the gameplay. I love the characters. I love what this game, how different it is from a Call of Duty, from a Battlefield. And yeah, I'm rooting for it. But let's go ahead and talk about our next story. Brazil's regulatory body called CADE has approved the Microsoft Activision Blizzard deal without any restrictions. Here is a long excerpt from CADE's public filing, and thanks to VGC for transcribing this so idiots like us don't have to. Quote, considering the huge popularity of Call of Duty, it is reasonable to infer that if Activision Blizzard games were no longer available on Sony consoles, PlayStation users could decide to migrate to Xbox or even a PC to continue having access to franchise games. On the other hand, it's also reasonable to assume that if upcoming Call of Duty games became exclusive to the Microsoft ecosystem, players loyal to the PlayStation brand could simply abandon the series, migrating their demand to other games available on their favorite console. Despite this, one cannot rule out the possibility that Microsoft may deem potentially profitable to adopt an exclusivity strategy on Activision Blizzard games, even if a decision in this direction could result in the sacrifice of a relevant part of sales, users, and even the Call of Duty popularity. This is because, in theory, such a strategy could contribute to boosting Xbox sales, expanding the Game Pass subscriber base, and strengthening the network effects on the Microsoft ecosystem, in order to offset any loss of revenue from the sale of games on the short term. End quote. And from here, I'm literally reading from the VGC article. Please go and check out their article for yourself if you get the time. Again, like I said, all the way at the top of this show, links for everything we talk about is in the description. So again, props to VGC because they have an excellent write-up on this. They said, the CADE verdict goes on to state that it believes exclusive content has been very important for competition in the console market. And one of the main factors responsible for PlayStation and Nintendo's position as market leaders. Quote, exclusive games are a benchmark of competition between Microsoft and Sony Interactive Entertainment, although no company has so far developed or acquired an exclusive game that has decisively shifted the balance in favor of a console. This is because proprietary exclusive games are less popular and represent less revenue than third-party AAA games, which until then are available on Xbox and PlayStation. As already seen, Nintendo does not currently rely on any content from Activision Blizzard to compete in the market. In turn, Sony has several predicates. Strength of the world's leading brand for more than 20 years. Extensive experience in the sector. Largest user base. Largest installed base of consoles. Robust catalog of exclusive games. Partnerships with multiple publishers. Brand loyalty consumers, etc., which should contribute to maintaining the competitiveness of PlayStation in this post-operation scenario, even in the face of possible loss of access to Activision Blizzard content. Furthermore, it is important to highlight that the central objective of Cade's activities is the protection of competition as a means of promoting the well-being of Brazilian consumers and not the defense of the particular interest of specific competitors. After all, one cannot lose sight of the fact that the holder of the legal assets protected by law number 12529/2011 is the collectivity and not the competitor/economic agent as an individual entity. In this case, although it is recognized that part of the users of PlayStation consoles from Sony could decide to migrate to Xbox in the event that Activision Blizzard games, and especially Call of Duty, become exclusive to the Microsoft ecosystem, Cade does not believe that such a possibility represents in itself a risk to competition in the console market as a whole. End quote. Ooh, that's a lot of stuff. Michael, what are your thoughts on Brazil approving this deal and what they had to say about it?
I don't have too much to say because I think it's pretty cut and dry. I completely agree with Cade. It's not up to Sony to, I'm sorry, it's not up to Brazil to protect Sony from their competitors. It's up to Sony to protect Sony from their competitors. And again, well, we talked about this before. Embracer Group has so many developers and studios under their umbrella that even if Sony or Microsoft were to pick up Activision Blizzard King, it wouldn't give either one of them a big enough slice of a pie to be a monopoly or anything close to it. So everything within of what Brazil was saying of is to protect consumers, not a particular company. I think
you hit nail on the head with that one. Right there.
Yeah. Yeah,
because I think that gets it. Because the reason we're talking about this, Michael, is Sony really, I don't think we'd be talking about this story if Sony over the past few months, and apparently now Google, I think, has gotten in on this. Like, oh no, this deal shouldn't go through. Look at us. We wouldn't have any sales. They would have the monopoly on everything. And this has led to the whole debate online, and it seems endless at this point. Luckily, it seems that there's going to be more word about it, I believe, in late November. What is that, the US's or the UK, one of the two? We'll be talking about it more late November.
Right now, the UK regulation is in their investigation stage.
Okay. So we're getting ever so closer to the final verdict on what's going to happen here. It's not a done deal. It really isn't. I can definitely see a case where Sony gets their wish and this deal doesn't go through. But at the same time, as an Xbox, okay, so it's hard to kind of like distance myself because I am an Xbox player. So, you know, it is enticing to me for Call of Duty games to go to Game Pass and Activision Blizzard to be with Xbox. That said, even trying to distance myself from that, Sony should be fine You know, and I think them, I think Cade bringing up Nintendo as an example is a fantastic example of like Nintendo doesn't need Call of Duty to succeed. Yep. And they're doing just fine without it.
They got Splatoon.
And I think another thing is Sony's talking in extremes that Xbox is going to just rip Call of Duty away from Sony. And they're going to throw it onto Game Pass, and that's where it's going to live in exclusivity. And yes, you can look at the track record of what they've done with Bethesda over the last few years, and with Starfield being an exclusive to Microsoft. I 100% get you if that's the take you want to go with this. That said, I still don't see it with Call of Duty. There's so much money to be made with it being multi-platform that as long as the relationship between Xbox and PlayStation doesn't erode to worse than what it is right now, it should still be on PlayStation. I don't see any logical reason why it wouldn't.
Yeah, no, Microsoft is not trying to lose money on this multi-billion dollar deal. They're still, and since Sony wants to keep doing their exclusive modes and exclusive deals with Activision Blizzard for Call of Duty, and that's the biggest thing that they
don't see. That's what I find hilarious too, is Sony's talking about, like, granted, we're talking about the full games and Sony's getting modes and skins, but still, yeah. Part of it's hilarious to me that they're over here like exclusive content for these games are, it's wrong. Meanwhile, purchase Modern Warfare 2 for the exclusive skin for this operator. What?
Yeah, and I think the main reason that Sony doesn't want to do it is because not only would they lose out on this exclusive deal after their initial contract ends in like 3-5 years or something like that, but also, don't forget, a few months ago, earlier this year, Sony, Jim Ryan also complained that it would take them forever to catch up with Game Pass. And I think that's the biggest threat that they're trying to go with, is that, hey, if they get Activision Blizzard King, there's a lot of stuff that's going to make Game Pass way more attractive than PlayStation Plus Essential and Premium and Expert or whatever the third thing they got. And I think that's the big thing. You have Spyro, the Spyro Trilogy that came out, that's going to be on Game Pass. You got Crash Bandicoot. Yes, that's going to come to Game Pass. It's not just Call of Duty. Call of Duty's going to come to Game Pass. Yes. World of Warcraft, that's a big money maker. My Xbox is going to be able to bank on that, and they could bring that with they could bring that to Xbox Series X, and especially since they support mouse and keyboard, so they could bring that to the Xbox ecosystem, and a bunch of people will move over there to play Call of Duty, Crash Bandicoot, Spyro, World of Warcraft. So many MMO players are going to get into World of Warcraft on Xbox because more and more MMOs are coming to consoles. And if Xbox gets something like World of Warcraft on there, that's a whole new player base. And that's going to make Game Pass just look so attractive to other people. They're like, yeah, why am I buying a $600, $500 PlayStation 5? Especially since Sony's bumping up the price on PlayStation 5s. And Xbox and Nintendo's like, no, we're not doing that. We're not changing our prices. So more people are going to be like, yeah, why wouldn't I just spend $180 a year to play all of these amazing games on my Xbox and my PC?
That's another thing with Sony. I feel like I'm interrupting y'all show. I feel bad.
No. I pretty much reached the end right there. Like, that's going to be the biggest threat to Sony, is that they just introduced the new PlayStation Plus line, and they're trying to play catch up to Game Pass. And if Microsoft gets Activision Blizzard King, that's another decade or two of them trying to play catch up.
So that's another thing, though, with Sony, is they increased the prices of PlayStation 5s in specific regions. And a lot of people have really taken exception to that. Rightfully so, in my opinion. But it's one of those things to where PlayStation, them trying to make this case for why this deal shouldn't go down, they're doing everything possible outside of that to tank that reputation that they have. them the past, what, 2-3 years, I want to say, Sony has went from what they were that year, E3 2013, and now they're back to what they were during the PS3 days, it felt like. Like, what are y'all doing? It feels so anti-consumer these days, and it's unfortunate because I think everybody was really loving the PS4 era of Sony and wanted more of that. And
yes,
it's just, if the PS4 era of Sony were the ones talking about this, I think it would carry so much more weight. But hearing it right now where Sony's at and they're increasing prices and are doing all these things that are making PlayStation fans and other Xbox players and Nintendo players and everybody who plays video games just kind of like scratch their heads. It's just, what are you doing? What are you talking about?
Yeah.
Come on now.
Like, the only reason they don't want, they try to make it sound like it's anti-competition is because, hey, recently we threw our games up to $70 and Xbox is going to have all these games, especially Call of Duty, which is a huge popular game for everybody. It's going to go to their Game Pass service. How are we going to convince players that, hey, yeah, you're going to want to keep paying $70 for all of our stuff? You pay $180 to play the newest Call of Duties and Warcrafts and Crash Bandicoots, all this on the on Game Pass, either PC or Xbox, because Sony is still slow to start when it comes to the PC crowd and getting their stuff on PC, especially since the PlayStation Plus lineup doesn't do day and date. That makes the Game Pass even more like attractive to players. So really, their hubris is really starting to show, and it's ridiculous that they're going back to that PlayStation 3 era to where they were just so full of themselves because the PlayStation 2 was the best-selling console ever.
Yeah, most definitely. So let's go ahead and talk about our main topic.
Yes. So we actually shouldn't take us too long because, hey, it was a teaser trailer. Nintendo has officially dropped the first trailer for Super Mario Bros. Movie. So, real quick, Taylor, did you get a chance to watch
it? Let me break down the trailer real quick for anybody who is living under a rock and didn't watch it. Basically, it starts off with Bowser completely obliterating a bunch of penguins, which is just hilarious. As somebody who played Super Mario 64, I got a lot of catharsis out of that. I really did. I did not care for those penguins, so that was really funny and really cool.
What'd they do to you?
Well, I don't appreciate how they kept asking me to look for their kid over and over.
Oh my goodness.
And not only that, Mario Kart, they always get in your way. And I'm talking about Mario Kart 64. So I'm not a big fan of the penguins in the Mario world. Then we cut to what I believe is going to be the most hyper-criticized two lines of dialogue in a teaser trailer. And that is Mario's first word spoken by Chris Pratt. So my thoughts on all this, I thought this was a great teaser trailer. I thought it was really funny. Jack Black is going to crush it as Bowser. I thought his voice was going to be completely different than it was.
I didn't even know it was him at first.
That he did a great job from what we've seen so far. And he gives out, we got more to work off of with his Bowser, I think, than we do with a Mario or Toad. We get to hear Keegan-Michael Key's Toad for like one line, which was solid. As for Chris Pratt's Mario, which has been just, again, people have takes.
It was never going to be good, and not on Chris Pratt, but like just the internet in general. So like, no matter what performance he gave out, I don't think it would ever kind of meet what people want.
That's the thing for me is I want to hear more because it's two lines of dialogue, and they're not going to judge it. The first line is just sounding like Chris Pratt. The second one sounds like he's doing a Brooklyn kind of an accent. It reminds me a lot of Rocket from the MCU, which is kind of hilarious considering. But it's not the worst thing I've ever heard. I've seen some complaints that just, it makes it seem like this movie is the second coming of that first trailer of Sonic, is near that bad. Nowhere near that bad, people. Hey, let's be honest here. The reason Nintendo got Chris Pratt as Mario 2 is they saw, oh, he's Star-Lord. Oh, he voiced the guy from the Lego movie, and that made a boatload of money. Oh, he's had other voice acting work before, and we're getting all these other, yeah, let's get Chris Pratt as Mario. That's different.
He's the flavor of the
week. I think if he came out, too, with his heavy Italian accent, that was supposed to be...
Ooh, it would have been awful.
Not only would have been awful, I think people would have criticized that, too. So, I don't know, man. I don't. I thought it was a really damn good trailer that I would much rather talk about things like the animation and the intro, which
were fantastic.
I know, it's so good. Then talking about, again, the two lines of dialogue from Mario and Chris Pratt's performance that we're going to hear more from, of course, whenever we actually watch the full movie.
We don't really get a whole lot of Luigi, though.
Yeah, we got none of Charlie Day's Luigi, which is a little unfortunate. But it is a Super Mario Brothers movie, which is kind of disappointing that we didn't get any Luigi in this, except for the small bit where he's running away at the very end.
Yeah, we don't see Luigi and Mario together. We don't see them trying to figure out what's going on. Again, we know it's a teaser trailer. But, you know, you made this big deal, like, yeah, we got Jack Black, which we got a bunch of Jack
Black. The whole Nintendo Direct. Okay, the one thing I will criticize Chris Pratt for, the one thing I will, and then this is the last time I'm talking about it, is it is hilarious. And granted, maybe this teaser is the reason why, and it's more prevalent in the actual movie or in another trailer. But it's hilarious that in the months leading up to this, he was like, I'm doing something different with the voice. I've been working really hard at it. And it is just a slight Brooklyn accent. I'm like, you know, if you didn't say anything, I would not have any complaints. I really wouldn't. Yeah, but you had to say that, like, I'm working hard at it. I'm like,
yeah,
did you?
Yeah, you had to bring it up.
You had to bring it up. And then you see, you know, Jack Black doing this crazy... To me, he's crushed.
This is so cool.
Yeah, I think he crushed it. So again, I'm trying to avoid it, but I can't keep from talking about it because that's what everybody wants to talk about right now. I want to see the full movie. I want to see what his voice sounds like. If it is just Chris Pratt with a slight Brooklyn accent, it's not going to ruin the movie for me. It's just going to be one of those things that, like, oh, Jack Black, I think, is the MVP, because I think he will be the MVP of this regardless. But I don't think it's going to ruin the movie for me just because Chris Pratt doesn't have a heavy Italian accent doing the original voice actors, trying to imitate the original voice actor. So, and I don't know if I would have wanted the original voice actor in this movie doing his Mario voice the entire movie. That might have got a little grating for me.
Yeah. See, that's the thing. It was like, oh, I don't know if he can do it the whole movie, not because he's bad, but because you really want to hear a high-pitched, stereotypical Italian accent, like, let's go, the whole movie. No, we don't even like the Minions because we're sick of the high-pitched voice nonsense. So general audience, I don't think they would mind. No, the fans wouldn't mind, but general audience would be like, yo, I don't want to hear Mario talk at all. And I think Nintendo knows that, and they're very protective of their IPs. And they're like Disney protective,
you know,
when it comes to Mario.
Okay, I got a pitch here. This isn't Clash of Pistache, but here's my pitch. If Nintendo wants to keep doing more of these things, which I think they opened up a movie and television division here recently.
Yep.
But
because I think they want to do animated, more animated.
I want to see a Legend of Zelda show or movie based in, it's got to be Ocarina of Time. It's either that or Breath of the Wild. I would go Ocarina of Time just because.
You know, I don't think Nintendo would actually do adaptations like that. I think for them, they would do new stories, like, oh, treat it like if it's one of our games.
Well, that's also true. I could see that too, because that seems what the Mario movie is going to be as well.
Yeah, kind of like a Mario origin, like how he got to the Mushroom Kingdom.
But here's my pitch.
What you see?
A Zelda movie or TV show where Link, he just doesn't talk. You know, he has the grunts and screams when he's fighting and everything. But every time he tries to talk, somebody would, like, interrupt him. or talk over him or something, because I think that would just really fit in with the Link character. So whereas he is, like, Link's meant to be the blank slate for the audience, right? So I think it would be just really cool to be like, yeah, he doesn't even talk in the movie. He just gets interrupted.
I think he just, every time he starts to talk, I hear his, hey, listen, hey. It's like, yeah, Link is trying to say something.
Oh,
hey,
they do that. If they do a Legend of Zelda thing, that has got to be in there. A hey, listen from Navi. It's got to be there. But yeah, that's just my stupid pitch for a Legend of Zelda show or movie. Because you were bringing it up about Mario. But as for the other stuff in this trailer, I thought it looks really good. The animation is fucking phenomenal. The animation is
great. Yeah.
It is phenomenal. Yeah. I know people are also going to look at Mario a bit as well and hyper-criticize that. I think that looks great, man.
No, it looked really fun. To be honest, even though I knew I was watching the Mario trailer, when it first showed up, I was like, yo, this looks really good. Like, what? This is all when they came to the Snow Kingdom and the floating Bowser head. And I was like, oh, are they doing Bowser's Fury? And it was just a castle. I was like, oh my goodness, this looks really cool. And Bowser steps out looking cool. And his fire breathing looked cool. Even the penguins looked pretty cool. I was like, yo, you know what? I don't care what you say, Taylor. Those penguins looked cute and cool at the same time. And they weren't afraid. They were ready.
No,
to
it
attack.
Was a hilarious scene, and I loved the King Penguin being like, "Do you yield?
Do you yield?"
So it was great,
like, all that confidence. So I was like, you know what? I'm actually I'm on board with this, not because with Illumination, I like Illumination. I know people are like, oh, Gru and the minions and all that. Yeah. But I actually think Illumination makes some fun stuff. I like their stuff. And when I heard they were doing a Mario movie, I was kind of iffy because I was like, Mario has a lot of cute characters and we really don't need another Minions nonsense going on.
Up until we got this trailer, every time people talked about that Mario movie. Yeah, that's coming out, ain't it? It's going to be a thing. And then, you know, I got this trailer and I'm very... It's weird to be like very excited for a Mario movie. That's a weird sentence.
I think they're doing it right this time because it's actually going to be animated.
Yeah, and it's what I am though. I'm very excited for this movie. It looks really good. It looks like genuine family fun. That's not. Oh, it's not 100% fart jokes and terrible.
That we know of.
It's a teaser trailer. Very good point. But like,
for all we know, Lu Jing gets so scared he can't help but shit himself.
But like you were mentioning, the beginning was great. The animation looks fantastic. The bit at the end with Luigi, that was a bit tacked on. I think to just include Luigi in there. But I'm curious to see what they do.
If they didn't, people would have been like, "Where's Luigi? This is called Super Mario Brothers. But there's only one brother in there." And I wonder why studios keep doing this to where they're like, oh, he might not be in this. Like Uncharted, he doesn't have the mustache. Oh, and
mustache is an end credit scene. It's like, well, I don't think we needed an end credit scene for Sully to have a mustache. And this is coming from somebody who really liked the Uncharted movie, except for Mark Wahlberg as Sully.
When they did the Tomb Raider reboot, they did that to where people were like, "Were her two guns? She's have two guns." They did that at the very end. It was like,
well,
why?
They did that in the games too.
What do you guys get out of
this? In the game, I think it was more earned because we're playing as the character, and that's something else too. Is I think we were talking about this with Last of Us last week, and we were talking about like, I wonder how people are going to feel watching it instead of playing as these characters, and the different kind of experiences people have with it. And Mario's different though. Mario isn't the Last of Us, obviously, other than tone. But Mario is arguably, to me, top three most recognizable mascots in the world.
If I remember correctly, I think Mario is more recognizable than even Pikachu.
I would believe that.
And I want to see Mickey Mouse, but I'm not 100% sure.
That would be
shocking.
But I would also believe Mario that. Is, that's why I was like, I don't want to say Mario's best, but I will easily, confidently say top three.
Yeah, he's easily one of the most recognizable characters and brands out there. Like even my mom, who doesn't really care about video games, you know, she enjoys Super Mario games. And, you know, you show her Mario, she's like, oh, yeah, that's Mario. You show her Pikachu, yeah, that's Pikachu. You show her any other Pokemon, yeah, that's Pikachu. Okay, mom, you know Pikachu, you know this isn't Pikachu. Alrighty, so with that said, we went a little longer again, as usual, than we planned to. But we're going to go ahead and get out of here. So, Taylor, what are you playing?
I don't have too much that I'm playing. I hope to play some Overwatch 2 this weekend. Let's see if that works. Michael, what are you playing?
As for me, I am actually playing a few things from SteamFest, and I'm hoping that we can talk about it in the next episode. Friend versus Friend. Taylor, check it out. It is so fun. I love it. I know when we first talked about it, you and Riley laughed because y'all knew I was going to love that game. It is actually really fun. So for anybody who's into the podcast, Next Fest is from now until October 10th. So please check it out. Check out
Friends. Really fun. Is that that game from
the card base?
It had that Dragon Tales style.
No, it wasn't the Dragon one. It was the one with the animals playing the card game, and they all had guns. And
yeah, stuff it had other. Like a Dragon Tales theme song attached to it. That just like, wait a minute, why does that sound like? It like brought me back to like when I was 5 years old for a second. Then these animals are shooting at each other. I'm like, wait a minute, this is different.
Yeah, I think you said that when we first saw it. Yeah, but yeah, I've been playing Friend versus Friends. It is so fun. So Taylor, give it a try. You and I think maybe we should send me your friend. We should link up on Steam and play a couple games. So when we talk, so hopefully we can talk about it next week, and let people know that. You enjoyed a cart-based game where you could shoot a duck in the face with an alligator.
We'll see. We'll see if I can get the time. I got this show to get out. I got some Nerds Talk movie stuff, which, by the way, check out the latest podcast description for Nerds Talk movies. I did change it just a little bit. We're going to Mondays from here on out. So, it's just a change in my schedule. Hence, we were supposed to have an Annihilation episode out. I got the audio a little late. So, it'll be out as soon as I can get it out, the Annihilation episode. And then we'll have Batman Long Halloween posted on Monday. Part one. That's very... I forgot, there's two parts to it. So, one will be going out on Monday. Part two will be the following week. And Annihilation will be posted whenever I can. Again, sorry for the delay.
Whenever I can. All right, so now we know what you're working on, but where can we find you?
You can find me in this Discord that we have here over at the Nerd Stash Network. On that Discord, we talk about, you know, video games, movies, stuff, you know, bunch of nerd stuff. So if you want to join that again, click the link in the description.
Find me on Twitter at @M_MOSLEY_JR. You find a weirdo in the Fox Hoodie. Congratulations, you are in the right place. All right, and as Taylor mentioned before, you can find us on our Discord. We really enjoy if you came and joined with us and talked to us about all kinds of things and how you can't get into Overwatch 2 and play. Leave us a rating, pretty please. The better the rating, the more we'll feel good about ourselves. And finally, check out thenerdstash.com for all sorts of news in the world of gaming, movies, television, and so much more. We also have guides, reviews, opinion pieces, and various other types of content over there as well. Just like Discord, the link to thenerdstash.com is in the description of this very episode. So Taylor, thank you for joining me. And thank you for everybody who listened in, whether this is your first time or your 6,000th time. We appreciate you. And we'll be back next week with a brand new episode.